Here we are, lawyer talk off the record on the air. We've got sort of a law school edition plus what's the appeal edition, and the theme of the day, ain't no party like a Diddy party.
From the great words of LeBron James.
The estimable words of LeBron James. Ain't no party. Well, it turns out he was right.
Yes, yeah,
because there is no party like a Diddy party. It just turns out that maybe it was also, there were some crimes being committed. But not as bad as the government alleged, is it?
Yes. Absolutely.
As the jury, at least that's what the jury says. Yeah. You were asking me some questions about some motions, meaning some legal arguments that the defense was making after Diddy was convicted.
Yeah. We always talk about conviction. And then next step, we talk about the appellate process. Then there's this like short window between conviction and sentencing where lawyers will file these like the pre-sentencing post-trial motions. And there was some filed in Diddy's. And I mainly just want to talk about like, when are these actually even like legitimate motions to file? Like, they just seem like throwaway motions to me.
All right. Well, let's first define some terms for everybody else. A motion is really a written legal argument making a request for some legal remedy. So when you hear motion, it's not like lawyers running up and they're waving their hands. But what they're doing is asking the court to grant some legal relief. And you're also talking about post-conviction. So Diddy's been convicted. He has not yet been sentenced. There's this gap in time. And the lawyers have filed post-conviction motions making some legal arguments. And I think what they're arguing here, well, you go ahead.
What they argued in was they were asking for a new trial. And the arguments in there was that these trials were, I mean, the charges were so outrageous that like the jury had to convict him on like the minor stuff because they were just like blasted with this terrible stuff. So they had no choice.
All right.
That's what their argument was.
So first, motion for new trial. So now what's going on is the attorneys for Diddy are saying, we want a new trial for legal reasons. We haven't even been sentenced yet. There's not even been an appeal yet, but we're saying trial court, give us a new trial because there were some legal mistakes here. Let's stop there and give that a little bit of lip service. Say in Ohio, we've just been convicted and we file a motion for a new trial. There's a provision for that in the Ohio criminal rules. And in most jurisdictions, federal court included, there's a provision for a motion for a new trial. Typically, you use the term throwaway. Did you say throwaway motions?
Yeah, throwaway. Yeah.
So typically throwaway motions are, we're doing it because it looks good, or maybe we're making an argument or whatever we're doing, but we don't expect to win. But there's some strategic reasons why, one, you might have to do it, and two, you might want to do it. Let's talk about the have to. Every now and then you might run into an argument that you have to make at the trial court level. I think this is probably a rare bird. Typically what I would be looking for is if we identified some sort of jury misconduct. And I don't mean a jury's committed a crime. Maybe a juror's committed a crime. But let's just say that it just so happens there's a guilty verdict. We talked to the jurors afterwards, and a juror said, by the way, juror number two, he told us throughout the proceeding that he was watching the news, and he hated Diddy, and he was going to convict him no matter what. All right, well, that's an obviously extreme example.
Yeah.
That is something that we would want to raise, and maybe even have to raise in a motion for a new trial, because the trial court's the entity that could fix that. You know, they could call that juror back in. It's all like the iron is still hot.
Yeah.
You know, turn those machines back on, you know, come back here and let's talk to that juror and have a hearing on this. That happens every now and then. There's a problem with that. And I'll just sort of scratch the surface of it. It's called the Aliunda rule, which basically says the sanctity of the jury, cannot be disturbed. We can't dig into really why the jury, decided something. There are exceptions, and misconduct would be one of them. Mm-hmm. That would be a good motion for a new trial. Maybe you found out immediately after trial that a witness lied. Again, maybe a motion for a new trial. You, every now and then you can say, judge, or you can also argue, judge, you made some decisions. We objected and we said, no, this witness on behalf of the government said Diddy did X, Y, Z. You shouldn't have let that witness testify, but you did. And here's law. We have now determined it's clear and convincing that you're wrong. We need you to revisit this and we should get a new trial. Now the problem with that is the judge probably is not going to say, oh, you know what? I changed my mind. You're right. And the other problem with that
is what just sparks the light bulb as, wow, this piece of paper just magically right. Like showed me the light,
but maybe,
yeah,
maybe. But you don't have to file that in order to later challenge it on appeal. In other words, trial, conviction, sentencing, appeal. Ordinarily, anything you want to challenge over here on the appellate side, you have to at least give the trial court, the judge at trial, a chance to fix it. Meaning, I object. We don't think that this person should testify, or whatever the argument is. You can raise that on appeal. And if you want, you can try again with a motion for new trial. Now, let's say that you raised or you objected, but you know the arguments, because of the ebb and flow and the heat of the battle at trial, you didn't argue it as strenuously as you wanted to. You can maybe re-argue it or add more into the record on the motion for a new trial. That way you're cleaner when you get to appeal, perhaps. But it wouldn't be a prerequisite, meaning you don't have to do it in order to appeal.
You can just basically add some more language in there, that like, or some case law just showing that you made a more solid record, I guess.
Yeah, you could you could clean up your record and you could say, look, Court of Appeals, not only do we argue it here, but we've given this judge a second chance based on these additional arguments. But you got to be careful, because they have to link up. You can't just add new arguments.
Yeah.
Unless the issue is new. Mm-hmm. That's not going to necessarily fix it. There has to be what we call contemporaneous, meaning at the time of the mistake at trial, you have to be on your feet screaming objection. There's a movie. It's with John Travolta. I think Robert Duvall is in it. And it's about, I forget, Civil Action, I think it's called. Mm-hmm. And in this movie, Travolta is a personal injury lawyer, a PI guy. And they're taking on the contaminated water in some town. I think it was Woburn, Massachusetts, actually. It's a real case. They're taking on the contaminated water. And the defense insurance company, or whoever the company's, whoever's in charge of the company's defense, hired Robert Duvall. I forget the guy's name in real life, but the actor was Robert Duvall. He was a law professor that taught evidence. And he made this joke that if you fall asleep, the first thing you say when you wake up during trial is objection. So you object to everything. And I think the movie sort of made a little bit more out of this than what is real. But, you know, for demonstrative purposes or for entertainment value, Duvall objected to everything in that movie. And it sort of threw, it flustered Travolta's character, and it flustered the process, but he always objected. But it, you know, there's some semblance of reality to that, because you want to object. You've been in trials with me.
Yep.
And you know, you've even nudged me. Shouldn't you be objecting? You're learning, which is great. And you know, it's better to object than not. And you would say, as a lawyer, I don't want to object, you know, I don't want to disturb, but it's really easy. And you've read transcripts where lawyers have done this.
Yeah.
It's easy in the heat of the battle to sort of say, shiver up into your turtle up.
Yeah.
And say, well, I don't want to upset the judge, and I don't want BS, object, get on your feet and object, and do it with authority and make your record. Objection, hearsay, confrontation clause, objection, violates the rules against character evidence, objection, objection, objection. And a motion for new trial later isn't necessarily going to fix it if you didn't object. It's probably better than nothing, but yeah, not going to necessarily fix it. So now back to Diddy. What's this all about? He's making an argument, or you go ahead and summarize the argument again.
So the argument is just that these charges were so outrageous that this jury had no choice but to convict him on these lesser ones. That it reminds me of like the whole throw a bunch of stuff at the wall argument. They just want to have something that sticks.
All right.
That was basically their argument. I'm not saying it's a good argument. I imagine it was kind of the best one they could make. That's what I think.
I like the creativity here, because what they're really arguing is this. All right, judge, the government has indicted my client, Diddy, on this plethora of charges. Some are very, very serious that carried huge sentences, but others are little mini ones, or that carry maybe 5 years. I think he's looking at what, up to 5 years or something?
Something like that, I believe. All right.
So let's just say the most serious ones would have been life or 30 years or something.
Yeah.
The least serious are 5 years. And they're, what the defense team is arguing is, judge, what the government did here is contaminated the fairness of this trial by accusing Diddy of these horrible things. And this resulted in what we call sort of commonly in the slang, a compromise verdict. Meaning the jury said, wow, we're not going to convict him of these serious things, but to the extent there's any question about anything, we'll do the little ones.
Yeah.
Like no big deal. Now there's a couple problems with that. And I like the argument, and it would be premised, by the way, on something called due process or fundamental fairness, or this idea that you can't contaminate a trial intentionally like this. It would violate my client's right to due process and a fair trial, all sort of premised in the Fifth Amendment and in the federal Constitution and the 14th Amendment as that applies to the states. But anyway, it's just a fundamental fairness argument. This is BS. They only did this to gain an unfair advantage at trial, they knew they couldn't prove these cases, and therefore they did it in order to increase the likelihood of getting a conviction on the little ones. There's a couple problems with that. I like the argument, by the way, and it's, you know,
it's really the best hand they had.
It's a good argument. The problem, though, is this. We have in our society something called a grand jury or a probable cause determination. And typically what happens when somebody is indicted or charged with crimes, we have a grand jury. And the grand jury's role is to meet in secret with the prosecutor, and they're supposed to be a bulwark against this kind of stuff. In other words, they have to decide if there's a threshold amount of evidence, just a beginning or starting point amount of evidence that would be that is there that would enable the prosecutor then to take the next step and actually charge somebody and take them to trial. And in theory, if there's not enough evidence, the grand jury could vote not to indict or not to charge somebody. We would call that a no bill. In practice, the old saying is the prosecutor could indict a hole in the wall. The prosecutor could indict a ham sandwich. I mean, it's not hard. And the defense doesn't even have a right to know there's a grand jury convened, let alone testify at a grand jury. In other words, if I know that my client's under indictment or under investigation, and I call up prosecutor and I say, ring-a-ling-a-ling, hey, Mr. Prosecutor, I want my client to testify in front of the grand jury, the prosecutor could say, what are you talking about? Well, I know there's a grand jury. I'm not permitted to disclose any of that. Well, my client wants to testify. Yeah, no. No. Now, other times, there was a jurisdiction here in Central Ohio that always invited the defendant to testify at grand jury. And, you know, on the one hand, you could say, well, that's sort of noble of them. On the other hand, how many poor defendants without lawyers went in and testified in front of the grand jury and made all sorts of incriminating statements under oath? It can go really bad.
Yeah.
Every now and then I'd have a client testify in grand jury every now and then, maybe once or twice, maybe in my 30 years. And I think both were self-defense homicide cases where a grand jury, the prosecutor's using the grand jury maybe for a, I don't call it a political purpose, but I'll say it this way. If the grand jury didn't indict somebody who committed a murder based on self-defense, the prosecutor could say, well, look, I presented to the grand jury. They decided it. They didn't want to indict it. So be it.
I feel like grand juries could do more damage than good for a defendant. Absolutely. It'd just be nice for the defense lawyer to be there. That's what really,
yeah, I would love to hear all the evidence, but yeah. You know, but back to the point, the grand jury would have approved these charges. And you can look, I'm not here to stand on a soapbox and say the grand jury is a perfect process that always protects a defendant from crappy indictments, because it doesn't, but that's what the law is going to say it does. Mm-hmm. And here we entered this realm of the mystique of the law. So for instance, in a trial, we just experienced this when we decided to do a jury wave trial, we get a jury instruction that says, you jurors are not permitted to consider the fact that this guy was accused of doing this conduct before to determine whether he did it this time, but you can look at that fact for other reasons. Like, nonsense. The jury's going to hear it. And you can't instruct your way out of what human nature really is. You can't do it. I at least most of the time you can't.
Yeah.
So some of this is, we call these, but yet we do it and we say the law is okay because we gave that instruction. And they're going to say here, the judge, I think, will say here, well, look, irrespective of what you may think, defense lawyers, about the sanctity of the grand jury process and whether it was actually a good bulwark against a crappy indictment, it's good enough. There was a probable cause determination. Therefore, we can wash our hands of it and say the overshadowing of the serious charges isn't a problem.
Mm-hmm.
But I like the argument. It's a great argument. Yeah. Yeah.
I think the only time we've seen a good post-trial motion was, I think it was the, it was somebody's lawyer not informing them of, we're not gonna get in this whole rant, but the deportation for pleading guilty. And then they like wanted to change their plea, like right before the sentencing.
Yeah.
That was like the one time I've seen a good one, but all these, some of these appeals, I see them and they just seem.
Well, that wasn't like post-trial. That was post-plea.
Yes. Okay. So that, you're
it's
right.
Post-plea. But you could reverse that and say, look, I wouldn't have gone to trial had I known this. My lawyer didn't tell me this. Yeah, well, the train has left the station, as they say, or the cow's out of the barn, whatever the saying is. You can't put the toothpaste back in the tube. Pick your metaphor. Mm-hmm. It's not going to work, or a cliche. But here, you know, there's at least a colorable claim, because now the defense is going to say in response to the prosecutor, well, look, fair enough, grand jury aside, now we know because the evidence you brought into this courtroom was so flimsy that there wasn't even probable cause for it. And you guys did it, Mr. Prosecutor, only to gain an unfair advantage. And I guess the other grounding for this request is I'm talking about would be prosecutorial misconduct.
Yeah.
And again, those are the types of arguments that are sometimes raised in post-conviction motions or post-trial conviction motions.
Do you want to know how the motions went?
Denied.
Yes.
Summarily.
Yes.
Quickly.
Yeah.
So let's talk about, we did talk about some other reasons that people might file those motions, and Diddy's a good example of that. Publicity.
Yeah.
You know, or you want to get your argument out, and look, lawyers aren't immune from doing this. If you put something in a legal pleading, in theory, you have protection from it. You're not permitted. We are not ethically permitted to file frivolous motions, but say you're trying to inform, the public about your legal arguments, and you have a colorable way to raise a legal argument, a lawyer might file that kind of motion. You got to be careful here, though, because you don't want to file, I don't file motions willy-nilly just to educate the public on something or grandstand or bang the table. I think that ultimately, 9 times out of 10, it's going to backfire. You're going to get the judge is going to look at you and say, you're wasting my time.
Yeah.
And then you run the risk of saying, you lawyers, you have badgered me. You've wasted my time. This is frivolous crap. And how's that going to inform the court's decision? I would ask rhetorically on the sentence.
Mm-hmm.
Which brings us to the next topic. Diddy's going to be sentenced. And the other thing that is the other document that is almost always filed, particularly in federal court, would be a sentencing memoranda. This is like your argument to the judge about what the sentence ought to be. And in federal court, they have guidelines. In state courts, they have guidelines. And maybe sometimes you give a little legal analysis of what the guidelines would dictate. And by guidelines, I mean things the judge should consider before rendering a sentence. And that might be what you would guess, like risk of recidivism or what, has the guy been in trouble before? Is he going to be in trouble again? What's his history? What's his character? What's the nature of harm to the alleged victims? All sorts of things. But the need for punishment. These are all the things that go into those kind of sentencing memoranda. So the Diddy kid, when's he sentenced?
I have no idea.
Right.
I'm a terrible, terrible spokesperson for Diddy. I apologize to his team.
Yeah.
I'll get better at it. Maybe I should have gotten invited to the parties. I don't know. Maybe it would have been more.
I'm sure there'll be some music.
Okay.
that will document the whole process. But you brought up something else. You brought up jail time credit.
Oh, yes. Yeah, he's been in for, I want to say, at least a year, year and a half. So he's going to get some, he gets credit for all that, right? Isn't that how it normally works?
Yeah, he'll get credit. By credit, we mean he was arrested as the case was charged.
Yep.
Held in jail. Apparently, I don't know if he's held without bond or held on a bond amount that he couldn't make, which.
No, I think he tried putting up, that was kind of a crazy story at the time. He tried putting up his house and everything. He put up like $40 million. They were like, no.
They still wouldn't take it.
Yeah.
So he's held without bond. He's getting credit for the time he served against whatever sentence the judge will impose. And, you know, it's been almost 2 years, I think.
It's been a year, year and a half, but it's called a decent amount of credit.
Yeah. All right. So he's got 18 months of credit against, say, a 5-year sentence. And then there's other things that can happen, like good time, or there's ways to get, he won't serve much more time, I don't think, mm-hmm. ultimately speaking. But anyway, they didn't teach you any of that in law school.
Apparently. No, no Diddy parties at school.
Yeah. Yeah, there's nothing like a Diddy party. So look, if you've got a question, you got a topic you want us to cover right here in this segment or any other Lawyer Talk segment, shoot it to us in the comments. Go to lawyertalkpodcast.com and send me a question there. And by the way, if you like it, if you're enjoying this content, you know, give us a like, subscribe, do what you're supposed to do in the social. You guys probably know more than I do, but do what you're supposed to help us out. We appreciate it. This is Lawyer Talk, off the record, on the air. They don't teach you that in law school style. Till next time.